Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
Alonzo Trier plays or practices basketball 7 hours a day. He's been doing so for 4 years. A nationally recognized scouting service has named him the best player in his age group for the last several years, and so it's no wonder that Alonzo Trier has received questionnaires from colleges interested in his talents, except that Alonzo Trier has just turned 13. In the Sunday New York Times Magazine, Michael Sokoloff tells the story of this player and how he represents the way college coaches are expanding their search for talent into the junior high and grade schools. This week I spoke with Michael Sokoloff and asked him how he'd first heard about Alonzo Trier and what he'd heard.
Well, I was looking to write about this world of what's sometimes called grassroots basketball and sort of casting about for characters. And Alonzo Trier, you know, in this world is a pretty well-known kid, and you don't have to go very far before people say, oh, you should check out Alonzo Trier, and he's rated by Hoop Scoop, which is one of the leading scouting services, and some of these other services. And I went out to the Junior Phenom camp in San Diego last summer and looked at him play and met him for the first time out there.
Before we get into his specific talents on the basketball court, how old was Alonzo when his clothing line was established, and how did that happen?
I suppose that was probably a year or two ago. Alonzo just turned 13, and Seattle, for whatever reason, happens to be a hotbed for young basketball talent. So there's an entrepreneurial designer, manufacturer out there who wants to put, you know, personally branded clothes plus the brand of his company on some of the better players because he knows that, you know, they travel the circuit. They're looked up to. They are sort of walking billboards or possible viral advertisers for his brand. So Alonzo gets all these clothes with his motto, you know, on them and his area code on them. And, you know, it's just part of his world. It's what he knows. It seems normal to him. Great basketball player. All these clothes come my way.
So are there actually 10 and 11-year-olds out there at AAU tournaments saying, I want to be like Alonzo?
You know, I think there are. I was at a tournament with him, the camp actually in San Diego, and I'm talking to him, and a father walks up and interrupts our conversation and says, excuse me, can you take a picture with my son? Who was about Alonzo's age, by the way. And Alonzo's a nice kid. He says, sure. Snaps the picture, and the father says to Alonzo, thank you, brother, you're a role model. Which, you know, I just stood there and thought, my goodness, this is pretty interesting.
Like lots of kids his age and younger, Alonzo plays AAU basketball. He lives near Seattle, but he plays in tournaments in Texas and California as well as on the East Coast. And you say the AAU's practices, quote, mock traditional definitions of amateurism. How so?
Well, there's just a lot of money flowing through the whole system. Teams, individual teams, the best teams are recruited or coveted by the sneaker companies, Nike and Adidas, by the apparel companies like Under Armour, and they want to fund these teams so that the apparel can go to the kids and they can sort of bind these kids or attract these kids as sort of like lifelong, you know, Nike users or Adidas users, and the hope on these companies' parts is that, you know, somewhere in the mix is the next LeBron James, the next Kobe. So if Alonzo Trier, you know, gets to the promised land, you know, he's a possible Nike endorser. So there's just all this money that flows through the whole system. There's all this free travel. And then there are suggestions of under-the-table money as well. So that's why I said that the concept of amateurism is mocked.
We ought to talk a little bit about how good this kid is as a basketball player. What in his game leads people to think he might be the next LeBron James?
You know, that's a great question. And I stood on the sideline, and I think I know a little bit about basketball. And I tried to answer that question. How much is hype and how much is reality? First of all, he's not that big. You know, he's about average, a little bigger than average for his age, but he's not that tall for somebody with elite basketball ambitions. He's a great ball handler. He's a terrific shooter. He's fast. I'm not sure that he's lightning fast. I'm not sure that he's a blur, as one of his coaches put it to me. So, you know, the question of how good is Alonzo? You know, I think he's awfully darn good. Is he as good as everybody thinks he is? I hope so, because he's planning on it.
Well, not only is he planning on it, his mother's planning on it. The whole town is planning on it.
Well, absolutely. And you know, there is a lot of hype, and there are these services that really live on creating, you know, somebody like Alonzo. And the problem, I hate to use the word problem, because I try not to be one of these writers who's exposing problems. I prefer just to tell a story. But having said that, the problem is when you tell a 12 or a 13-year-old and fill his head with all this stuff, you know, he's convinced on some level that he's headed straight to the NBA. Hmm. And I don't know if that's true.
In doing this story, Michael, did you get any sense of how accurately even the best judges of basketball talent really can project from a time a kid is 12 or 13 to the time he's 18 how good he's going to be?
I think that they can accurately project that with a really big kid. A LeBron James, who's 6'5", 6'6", by the time he's 13, 14 years old, you know, if you are an extra tall kid and you're coordinated and you can shoot and you have the genius and the artistry of basketball, I think that's a pretty sure bet, a surer bet than you can make in most other sports, because height is such a big part of the equation. You know, a 6'9 person who can do all these things has a future in basketball. I think it's really much dicier with somebody Alonzo's size. If he doesn't get past 5'10, I don't know what happens. If he gets to 6 feet or 6'1, I think he's still got to be as fast as Allen Iverson. I don't know if he's going to be as fast as Allen Iverson.
At that Junior Phenom camp, and I love the name, by the way, you found a program that listed not only the heights and hometowns of the participants, but also their chosen nicknames. Run some of those by me and tell me what, if anything, they reveal.
Well, the ones that struck me were variations on the word money. There was a G-Money, a K-Money, a Cash Money, and somebody who just called themselves Money. And
I shouldn't be laughing at this, because in a way it's very distressing, but, you know, hey, there we are.
Well, Bill, I think the, you know, if you want to look at it innocently, you know, sometimes when you're on the basketball court and somebody takes a shot and it always goes in, people say, well, he's money. Mm-hmm. So I suppose we could look at it that way, but I suspect it had a little to do with the more common definition of money, as in cash money.
Yeah, I like that, cash money, just in case there should be any confusion. He'll say it twice. How was the quality of basketball at these camps where all these alleged phenoms are gathered?
Appalling. It was what I would expect to see when you have a bunch of kids playing for themselves and playing to be noticed. They shot endlessly. Very few kids passed the ball. They didn't move without the ball. They didn't play team basketball. And for me, I watched it partly as a basketball fan, because I love basketball. I love the intricacies of the game. I love the passing, the moving without the ball. And I think a lot of basketball fans look at the modern game. We admire the athleticism. We admire, you know, some of the individual players. But most of us would say, you know, the game is not really the team game that we admire. And I think you can see a little more of that sometimes with the European players. So when I watched this camp and I watched the quality of play, and, you know, all the young NBA players and a lot of the best college players came from this environment, to me it was telling me, okay, well, here's the reason. Hmm. They all made their bones in this setting, you know, these kinds of settings. So, of course, when you go off to higher levels, you're not a team player.
Having spent the time that you have spent on this story, I can't imagine that you won't follow the progress, or lack of same, of Alonzo Trier. At what point in his development do you think you'll be able to say, oh my gosh, he is as good as everybody said, or, whoa, he didn't grow and it didn't happen?
I suppose the first marker will be when he's about ready to go to college. That's what he's pointing toward. By the way, that will occur sometime right toward the end of what could be a second Obama administration. So he's got a while to go.
But the college coaches are already watching.
Already watching for this job or whatever job they're in next. But I suppose that'll be one marker. You know, if the NBA is the goal, you know, that'll be another marker. And, you know, I should point out, I can easily be wrong. I don't hold myself out as a talent scout. I did a story several years ago on IMG Academies in which I followed some young baseball players. And I was certainly as skeptical. But I must tell you that I did look one up the other day, and he was a fifth-round draft choice of the Toronto Blue Jays. So it works out sometimes.
Michael Sokolov wrote the article entitled Alonzo Trier is in the Game, which will appear in Sunday's New York Times Magazine. Michael, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you. Great to be on with you.
My conversation with Michael Sokolov will be featured in this week's program. I'll also be talking with former UConn basketball standout Mel Thomas, who has written a diary-style book about her years as a Husky. Will you hear who she believes will prevail in the women's tournament? Whoa! We'll be updating the NCAA action, of course, and as lots of people look toward the Final Four, Only a Game's Karen Given will have a story about one of the teams competing in the Frozen Four, the women's ice hockey team from Mercyhurst College. So join us, and remember you can always hear the program by visiting our website, onlyagame.org.